What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Wrestling with Jonas. This is episode 153, and today is another special interview with another superstar from the Denver-based wrestling organization, Lucha Libre and Laughs. I've got the fans' addiction, Lonnie Valdez, with me today on the Wrestling with Jonas podcast. So, Lonnie, thank you for joining me all the way over across the pond there. How are you today?
I'm doing really well, man. Doing good. How about yourself? How's things?
Very, very good. Yes, it's kind of early hours in the morning over here in the UK, but fantastic to be speaking to you. So, we're going to be talking about your wrestling career, your love for pro wrestling, all the way through to modern times, modern day with Lucha Libre and Laughs, of course, the very unique Denver-based wrestling group. But Lucha Libre and Laughs, they actually returned to action, didn't they, a couple of weeks ago on the 21st and 22nd of August. And you were heavily involved in that two-night event. What was it like to kind of return to a wrestling ring after, what, maybe 5 or 6 months of not being in a wrestling ring and being involved those two evenings? And what was the atmosphere like in the Oriental Theatre, Lonnie?
It was a little nerve-wracking because I haven't been in a ring in 6 months, 7 months, whatever it was. And to, to make the return back to our big company, and to see the fans again and all this stuff was it was a big deal. And I was a little nervous, like, kind of, how's my timing going to be? How am I going to get set? All these different things. And, once you get out there and I get in the ring and the fans, start cheering, and, our venue, the Oriental Theater, usually has, like, we put 600 people in there, 615, I think.
Yeah.
But with COVID and social distancing, we were only allowed to sell like 50 tickets. So I was like nervous because, working with a great company like Lucha Libre and Laughs, you get used to working for the bigger, the bigger packed arenas,
Yeah.
So going there and like, all right, 50 fans. All right, let's see. But because they were spread out all over the arena, and because they were just so loud and into it, it felt like home and felt like we hadn't skipped a beat. And it was really fun. It was great to see like all the guys and, all of my all my friends that I, don't get to see that often. And
yeah.
So it was nice to come back to. It was really, really nice to come back to. And to me and Cody Devine, the first night, we had a really good match that I've wrestled him quite a few times, and I think we both agreed that was probably the best match we've ever had. So to come off of a 6 month layout and, get back in the ring and have your first match back be that intense and have the fans react that way, it was really nice. And, the second night I got to go and wrestle Anaya, the champion, and Marlon, who's like just this massive giant guy, and go out there and perform again and have a really great match the second night too. It was a really good and really nice return back to doing what I do. So yeah.
Was there any ring rust at all, Lonnie, or had you kind of knocked it off in training in preparation for those two nights, or did you feel that it took a couple of minutes to get going on night one against Cody Devine?
No, I didn't really feel any kind of ring rust. I was worried about that. I was worried about my timing and like kind of getting the feel for the audience and just knowing how to react to different things. But once I've been doing this quite a long time, so once I get going, it's kind of just like riding a bike. As soon as I got in the ring, I'm like, I know how to do this. Like,
yeah.
So it was nice. It was really fun to see the audience react the way they reacted. And no ring rust that I could see, though. I think everybody was just anxious to get back to doing it. So yeah, we were good to go. Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. And tell us a little bit about your kind of love for pro wrestling then, because am I right to assume that you've always been a big fan of pro wrestling? How did you get into pro wrestling? Was it through friends or family members? Tell us a bit about that, your love for pro wrestling as a fan then, Lonnie.
Family, actually. Way back, like early in the early 80s, one of my uncles and one of my aunts, they actually joined a pro wrestling school out here. As an older wrestler named Champ Thomas, he had a school out here. And so they went to the school and, they wrestled a few matches. My uncle ended up wrestling for him for a few years. And, they were done by the time, like, I showed up. So I grew up where, my aunts or whoever was babysitting me would put on old AWA with Nick Bockwinkel and like Marty Jannetty and, you know, all these guys. So I grew up watching that, and WWE, of course, was a big deal. And so I grew up just loving wrestling. And when I was like teenager, I started, internet started hitting really big. And, you know, all of a sudden, like, I was exposed to a lot of Japanese wrestling, and I was just like, oh, this is like, you know. So I was a huge, huge Pro Wrestling fan. And so, you know, Super J Cup 1994, and, you know, watching all of these, junior heavyweight wrestlers, and then discovering like All Japan Pro Wrestling and the Four Pillars and just all of these guys. That was just kind of like, I didn't know wrestling could be like that, you know. Used to the more entertainment kind of pro wrestling, watching Japanese wrestling was like eye-opening. And then all of a sudden cruiserweights started hitting, and it was like Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero and, you know, all of these guys. So I just kept the love for it just kept getting deeper, and really just like the history of it, the lore of it, like studying all of these interesting backstage stories of all these different promotions and how these things kind of come about. Just kind of really fascinated with the whole journey of pro wrestling, you know. So yeah. It was kind of when I got out of high school, I've been in martial arts since I was like 8 years old. So like when I got out of high school, my mother was kind of like, all right, are you going to be a wrestler or are you going to be a boxer? And I was like, I guess wrestling. So she's like,
so they practically encouraged you to get into the business then from a young age?
Pretty much. Yeah. So yeah, my mom was like, you know, figure out which school you want to go to, and we'll start figuring out how we're going to pay for it. And that's pretty much how it all came about.
Yeah. And back then when you were kind of still growing up and watching pro wrestling on the TV, I mean, was there much live pro wrestling in your area? Did you get a chance to see any pro wrestling in the flesh, or did you have to go out of town to see pro wrestling, or was it mostly on TV for yourself?
Well, mostly on TV, but like WWE would come to town, a couple of times a year, 2-3 times a year. One of my uncles, through his job, he'd get free tickets to go. So he'd always give them to me, or, you know, so we'd always end up going to the WWE house shows that they would have out here, and got to see some really fun, really good matches, or, you know, just seeing all these guys, Mr. Perfect and, you know, the Road Warriors and all these guys that were just like, it was always, you know, just right down the road. I don't live too far from downtown Denver. So, you know, anytime they came to the big arenas, we'd be down there. And go to a couple pay-per-views here and there, and, you know, Clash of Champions, that kind of thing. So anytime they came to town, I was trying to go.
Yeah, and it's fascinating that you mentioned the Super J Cup from them early 90s, 93, 94, because my mind was blown by exactly the same footage from New Japan. And you had, Eddie Guerrero, Chris Benoit, so many others. I think even Chris Jericho was in one of the Super J Cups, and so many of the Japanese legends as well. Shinjo Itami was one of them. Jushin Thunder Liger, of course, and so many fantastic Japanese greats. And was there a particular wrestler or wrestlers that you really gravitated towards when you were growing up and really enjoyed watching in particular then, Lonnie?
Pretty much, like, you know, if you've seen me, I do a lot of moonsaults in my matches, a lot of kicks and that kind of thing. And really big influence on my style would have been like Ultimo Dragon. I do quite a few Asai moonsaults, and so he's definitely one of those guys. But, you know, you talk about Super J Cup, you know, like Otani. I was a huge Otani fan. Jushin Thunder Liger, Great Sasuke, like all these guys. Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero were like very big influences on me really wanting to do this. And just kind of like that whole scene, like as much as I loved like Misawa and, you know, and Muto and Hashimoto and all those guys, it was like the smaller, quicker, more agile kind of wrestlers were like the guys that I was really like wanting to pattern myself after. And, you know, Dean Malenko was like a huge, like, just seeing how entertaining he could be and how he can keep up with all these guys and how he could, you know, he was running all of these crazy, you know, spots, and just how fluid and graceful he was. You know, it made me want to be more of a technician. So like all of these guys had different things that they added to the mix that I really wanted to incorporate and be a part of, you know what I mean? So just had a lot of different, influences.
Absolutely. And you've learned from the best, and you've picked up some good wrestling influences from some of the best, some of the greatest of all time. You've reeled off a fantastic list of names there. Let's talk about the very beginning of your wrestling career when you first broke into the business. You mentioned that I think it was your mother that gave you the option. Do you want to be a boxer or a pro wrestler? You chose to be a pro wrestler. How did that process start for you? How did you go about finding a training school? Tell us about that journey, because I think you ended up down in Florida, didn't you?
Yeah, down with Dory Funk Jr. So she told me to find a school, and I looked around, and there was two schools that I wanted to go to. There was the Shawn Michaels Wrestling Academy down in Texas, and then there was Dory Funk Jr., who Dory just came from the WWE. Like, he had been doing the Funkin' Dojo.
Yeah,
with him and I think Tom Pritchard. They were they were training, you know, getting guys ready for the E. So guys like Kurt Angle, the Hardy Boys, Edge, Christian, you know, all those guys. And then they got done. With WWE, and they end up going down to Florida, Dory and his wife, Marty. And they Dory started the Funkin' Conservatory. And so I called them up, and they wanted me to come down. And, you know, it was funny because I was only 17. But their school started on August 15th, which is my birthday. So my very first day in a pro wrestling ring was my 18th birthday. Wow. And so we had to like go and, you know, my mom had to sign all the permission waivers and all that other stuff. And, you know, so it was a really cool thing to, you know, to be able to do that and to go down there. I think my mom, somewhere in her house, she still has a picture of my 18th birthday with me cutting a cake for my 18th birthday. And Lita is sitting next to me because she was a part of that camp, too. So, like, yeah, there's a picture of me and her eating birthday cake. So that's a pretty cool way to spend your 18th birthday with a future Hall of Famer. So.
And did you have much time or much interaction with Dory Funk Jr. himself?
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, we still keep in contact and still talk to each other.
Every really? Day. That's cool.
Yeah. You know, Dory's amazing. He was very, hands-on with the school and, you know, was just in the ring with us constantly. And I think that first camp we had like 20 people in it, 22 people, something like that. And then the next camp we had like 35 people in it. And, you know, every camp that I went back to, you know, Dory was just, he was always there, just always in the ring with us. And, you know, always, you know, just a very, very, very good, very good guy and very good trainer and, you know, very caring as well. So I'm like, so it was a big honor to be in the ring with another Hall of Famer like Dory, you know, one of the biggest champions of all time.
Of course.
When he was a champion, it was a whole different way to be a champion. So it's pretty cool to be able to tell those stories as well, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And how long were you training for, Lonnie, before you made your debut in the ring? I don't know whether you wrestled for Dory in the ring, or did they have exhibition matches, or did they have their own little promotion throughout that training camp? How did it work, and how long before you had your first match?
5 days.
Wow. Okay, I wasn't expecting that.
So they did the training camp and they put together a show and, you know, put together a show. We had, you know, like 200 people there and in this tiny little gym. And yeah, so, my first match was a tag team match. It was me and this guy named Adam Windsor. And we took on this guy, Jeremy Jett and HC Loke. And, the veterans pretty much kicked the hell out of us. And then at the end of the night, we did this big battle royal. Where I believe Lita actually won the battle royal, and I think I was the first or the second person eliminated. So, like I didn't know what I was doing. I wasn't, I knew enough to be carried by veterans, and they're just like, okay, you're gonna do this, do this, do this, do this, and I'm like, yes, sir. So we just went in there and had a quick little, you know, 5-10 minute match, something like that. And then all of a sudden, like, I came back to Denver and started, you know, I found different wrestling promotions out here and started working for different companies and just slowly started to kind of get more experience under my belt. And I was going back and forth to Florida as well, you know, wrestling for Dory out there. So just became like, you know, get in the ring as much as you can and be very greedy about your ring time when you're that new into the business, you know. So I was able to get a lot of experience in a quick amount of time, because, you know, I was always in training out here or, you know, going to Florida or whatever it was, you know, just trying to be in the ring as much as I possibly could.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that having members of the family that are part of the wrestling establishment, you were smartened up to the business fairly early on. I mean, did you know that it was kind of a work before you went down to Florida?
Yeah, like I said, you know, there was not a big wrestling scene out here. Like, my uncle and aunt, they did some like little local shows, you know. It wasn't like a big deal, big arenas or anything like that. But yeah, I was smartened up really, really quickly. And, you know, a couple of my uncles, you know, wrestling friends, like, even before I went out to Florida, came down to kind of like walk me through it and kind of tell me, you know, this is how you do this, this is how you do that. And, you know, so it was nice when everybody knew what I was going to do. Like, you know, like I said, my uncles called favors in to, you know, have some of their friends that they knew were still out here to like come stop by and like kind of tell me a couple tips and tricks and stuff like that. So I kind of knew what was going on before I went down to Florida, and, you know, I was not prepared. I don't think you could ever be prepared for it, but it was nice to have some information going into it, you know?
Yeah. So you said that you were 18, very kind of young when you started training. You only 5 days later, you had your debut. How kind of soon after did you feel that you were starting to, you know, understand the business and things were starting to click and make sense and that you were starting to get the wrestling business, or that you were feeling confident in your abilities? Did that take a lot more time before you started to really feel comfortable in the business?
Well, I always felt like really comfortable. Like, a lot of people were just very nice to me. And so, like, you know, when I came back out here to Denver, there was not a lot of cruiserweights or smaller guys, right? It was a lot of heavyweight wrestlers. So they all wanted to work with me because they could lift me up really easily. And not, you know, I was, you know, being a smaller guy, I kind of offered something a little bit different.
Yeah.
At the time, you know, I was more of I was, you know, just more kind of like, didn't know what I was doing, just kind of getting in there and just kind of like, all right, performing moves as opposed to actually having a wrestling match. And, you know, so I always was comfortable with it. And I was always like very, and I've always been a very athletic kind of wrestler. So I had a lot of people like, you know, telling me I was good, even though like I was just doing moves, you know. And it took me a good long while before I figured out that storytelling and psychology and selling and those things are more important than being able to do backflips, you know. So I would say that it took me a good long while until I actually started to get good at it, as opposed to just being an aerial attraction. Then it was just like, okay, if we do this like this and we do that like that, all right, that's how we get the audience to actually feel something, as opposed to, you know, just cheering for the acrobatic stuff, you know. So it took me a long time before I actually felt like I was getting good at pro wrestling.
Yeah.
even though everybody was kind of gassing me up, you know, looking back on it, like, it took me a while before I actually was putting on good quality matches.
I understand. Absolutely. Our friends over at Hope Spot Clothing are offering listeners to the Wrestling with Jollers podcast 10% discount off of all of their t-shirts and merchandise. Simply use the code WWJPOD. That's WWJPOD. Hope Spot Clothing are a charity label with over 50% of all profits going to a variety of good causes. Go to their website, www.hopespotcc.com. That's hopespotcc.com. And take advantage of their great discount now. So, I mean, as we alluded to at the top of the podcast, You're a bit of a veteran in the game. You've been wrestling for just over 21 years. You just surpassed your 21st year anniversary, so congratulations on that. But before you joined Triple L, Lucha Libre and Laughs, you must have wrestled for quite a few of the promotions in different areas. You mentioned Florida. You mentioned wrestling for groups in Denver. Tell us a bit about some of the groups that you did wrestle for and maybe some of the success that you had as well along the road, Lonnie.
Oh yeah, like out here in Denver, you know, pretty much wrestling for everybody. I stopped in, had a cup of coffee at, you know, different promotions, that kind of, you know. There's a company out here called Primos that I've been, you know, that I've worked with multiple times. Had a lot of really good matches there with a lot of good talent. You know, I've been their champion, I think, 3 or 4 times now, and always, you know, always had fun and did good business there. While I was working with Primos, I was also the head trainer at their school called the Butcher Shop, and that's where like I trained wrestlers like Cody Devine and, you know, Caleb Crush and Trajan Ender and Royce Isaacs, who, you know, it's kind of blown up. He's a big deal now.
Yeah.
But you know, also got to like help out other wrestlers, you know, that are staples out here, guys that, you know, would come in and train with us, like you know, Brandon Morris and Bruce Rogers, Mondo Romero, and, you know, a lot of guys that would just stop in and work with us. So very fortunate to be able to operate with so many people and be able to wrestle so many different, you know, different guys. And yeah, man, by far and away though, like I, you know, the time that I've spent in Lucha Libre and Laughs has been insanely rewarding, and very, very happy with that. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about your wrestling style, your ring style. I mean, you've spoken to us already about your influences and your aerial artistry. I've got a question, as a matter of fact, from Mike Seidel, who got in touch with me to ask you a question on the Wrestling with Jonas podcast this week. And Mike asks, can you ask Donnie where he learnt his aerial moves? Like, was he a gymnast or a diver? Did he have a trampoline or something? I think it's a question that Mike's been dying to ask you over the years, but never got the opportunity to. So he's asking me to ask you on the podcast about where you learnt all of these aerial moves.
Well, thank you, Mike. I just did it one day. Like, we were in the ring, and we got this big crash pad, this big crash mat. And before that, I really hadn't been on the top rope or really done a whole lot of aerialistic stuff. Just like, I used to throw a lot of kicks and you know, that sort of thing. One day we started bringing in a crash mat, and I started trying to do moonsaults, but I was doing them wrong. I was like looking over my shoulder when I would do it, and your body follows your head. So like, I'd go like that and I'd be really crooked. And at one point I was just like, I just kind of, you know, sucked it up and just did it, not afraid and not protecting myself, and just going straight back. And when I did it, like, everybody there was just like, oh, that was pretty, that was really nice looking. I was like, oh, okay, cool. So then I just kept doing it like that. You know, started watching a lot of tapes with guys that could do some aerialistic stuff, and just doing, like, at the end of training, we would always save like the last half hour, last 15 minutes, we'd always pull out the crash pad and we'd just do all these, you know, really stupid things. And that's pretty much how I learned it. I was blessed with some good genetics, though. My mother was almost like a professional dancer at one point. My father was he was a state champion gymnast out here in Denver, 2 or 3 years in a row, something like that. So plus I'd been, you know, like I said, been doing martial arts since I was younger. So like, doing that kind of physical activity wasn't a new thing. But we kind of taught each other, me and guys like Trajan and, you know, another wrestler out here named Damon Chase. And we always just like, all right, that was cool. Try it like this. All right, let's do this. Let's do that. And so we just, we built our own like crash dummies out of like overalls and stuff like that. And we would, you know, do all our moves on that. And just, if you had a ring and a crash pad, man, like, it was a good time. All we did was just jump off the top rope. So, yeah. So that's kind of how I ended up learning all the different things that I do. I figured I'd, out of all of them, the one I did the best was moonsaults. So I just decided to do that 1,000 times.
And of course, Mike Seidel is no stranger to a good moonsault himself, as he would his yoga salt that he uses to finish off his opponents. But I mean, you've had the opportunity to go up against some amazing talent in your 21-year career. I mean, but one name in particular, before Lucha Libre and Lars, probably fairly early on in your career, you got the opportunity to wrestle pre-WWE Seth Rollins. So that must have been a thrill back then. He was Tyler Black, of course. How did that opportunity arise for you to face Tyler Black or Seth Rollins back in the day then?
That was for Saga Underground Wrestling, which is a company that I actually owned. I owned it and promoted it. And alongside another wrestler named Epic and another wrestler, Trajan Ender. And so we were trying to get a television deal with this channel that was on Dish TV, Dish and DirecTV. And so we were shooting a pilot for them, and we ended up bringing out a lot of wrestlers. We brought out like Raven and Sandman and Joey Ryan and somebody else I forget. Christopher Daniels.
Yeah.
And so we ended up doing this really big show and you know, it turned out good, and we ended up impressing the people from that television channel. So they wanted us to shoot a pilot, and we're like, all right, cool. Well, we got to bring people out, like bring some good talent out to shoot a pilot for. And I was the champion of the company at the time. So they were like, we were trying to figure out like who I was going to wrestle. So we brought out we brought Joey Ryan out, and he ended up wrestling Trajan Ender. And then we brought out Tyler Black or Seth Rollins. And we were trying to figure out if it was going to be him or this other guy, Brian Danielson. Yeah, we were trying to figure out which one would, you know, which would work best and what was going to be best in the budget and all these other things. And Tyler ended up, or you know, Seth ended up responding, and we brought him out, and you know, me and him had a really fun match. So yeah, that was it was really cool to wrestle him, and then later on kind of see him and you know, keep going and going and going, and then all of a sudden he wins the championship at WrestleMania, and you're just like, you know, it's pretty cool. Yeah, Tyler Black. That was a really, really fun match and a really big deal for, you know, for us out here. The channel that we were trying to get that the show on, the channel itself ended up folding. So we never got the television deal, and then our company ended up just folding. And so, you know, that's how that went. But yeah, no, that was good times to be able to get in the ring with him for sure.
What a fantastic story about that particular meeting with Tyler Black or Seth Rollins. And of course, back in the day, before he got signed to WWE, he was very much a daredevil, much like yourself, and prepared to take risks and weird and wonderful moves. But what a fantastic story. And it would have been either Tyler Black or Brian Danielson, otherwise known as Daniel Bryan, of course. So either way, it would have been a fantastic match, a great outcome. And congratulations on that anyway. Very, very good. Let's talk a little bit about you mentioned Royce Isaacs. Now, when I interviewed Nick Gossett, the founder and the promoter of Lucha Libre and Laughs, he mentioned that Royce just kind of came up to him. I think it was either after a Lucha Libre and Laughs show or during a Lucha Libre and Laughs show, and asked how he could become a pro wrestler, where he can get some training. And I understand that Nick just pointed Royce in your direction, and the rest is history. Is that how the story went between yourself and Royce and his kind of first step on the ladder of becoming a pro wrestler?
Yeah. So what Royce told me was that he was mentioning to friends that he wanted to be a pro wrestler. And one of his friends was walking down the street, just happened to be by the Oriental, and they saw the flyer for Lucha Libre and Laughs. And they told him about it. He showed up to the show and afterwards talked to Nick, and Nick sent him over to the Butcher Shop, which was the school that Primos was running. And I was the trainer. And, you know, I always showed up, you know, very early. So I showed up early and this guy's there. And I'm like, oh, nice to meet you, you know, shake hands, everything like that. And he's a bigger dude, you know, in really good shape. So I was like, all right, well, let's get in the ring. And I start And I'd like start showing him how to do things. So I was like, this is how you take a bump. And I take a bump and like, we're looking and like, he does it. And I'm like, here, do it like this. And I take another bump. And like on the second bump, I got up and I looked at him and I was just like, all right. So I forgot that I have a concussion. So I'm going to not do this right now. I'm not going to do any. He's like, yeah, please don't do it. You have a concussion. But I totally forgot. Like it was a very slight, like little minor, concussion that I had that, me and, Mondo Romero, we were, basically like rolling around, like, you know, kind of, doing some submission, wrestling a little bit. And Mondo accidentally, you know, reached over and he clocked me one. And I didn't even think about it. I didn't even know about it until like I got home that night. And when I went to go lay down on the couch, as soon as I laid down, like everything started spinning a little bit. And I was like, I know what this is. So like 2 days later, I go and, or like a week later, that's when Roy shows up and I'm just taking bumps and I'm like, oh, wait, I can't do this right now. I got a concussion. So yeah, me and Royce became like really, really good, really fast, really close friends, in a big way. Cody Devine as well, you know, like those guys were just always there. They're always, you know, they're the first ones to show up, last ones to leave, those kind of things. And, you know, Royce told me recently, he's just like, yeah, no, I remember it was just me and you there, man, all day, every day, like as often as we could. Like, you know, we were always the ones that were in the ring. So yeah. That's how I was introduced to young Mr. Royce Isaacs.
Indeed. And it sounds like you get just as much of a thrill and a buzz out of being a trainer as, a you know, as much as being in the ring as a talent yourself. Would that be fair to say?
Oh, yeah. No, yes. So many of my stories come from like training guys and like, you know, becoming so close and good friends with, you know, the guys that I've trained, you know, Royce included, Cody included. You know, I was just at Trajan's house last night, you know, Caleb Crush and all these guys that I've, you know, been in the ring with, just watching them come up. But even more so, even not just them, but like, you know, other guys that were trained by other people and stopped in and, you know, and just became good friends and close with so many different, you know, different people in this territory.
Yeah.
So it's like I said, it's been very, very rewarding, you know, just very happy to be able to, have those memories with like so many of my friends, you know, and training is where you, you develop those close friendships in a big way. So.
Indeed. Let's talk about Lucha Libre and Larson, because we have touched on it here and there. But I mean, I've said on this podcast many times before that it's unlike any promotion I've certainly come across. It's very, very unique. You've got the fans to start off with. It's only maybe 1/3 wrestling fans, 2/3 people on a night out, hen parties, guys just kind of, you know, there to see the comedy and not realizing that there's wrestling there. It's hosted at the Oriental Theatre, a very, very unique setting, especially as a wrestling venue, very, very unique. You've got live commentary playing over the speakers, over the PA system, with Sam Talent and Nathan Lunds, two Denver-based comedians. So it's all very, very unique, and it's the biggest party in Denver. But what is it about Lucha Libre and Laughs, Triple L, that you love so much?
You've kind of nailed it, man, how unique it is. It's a weird place and a weird story, you know, like LLL showed up and I didn't know, I hadn't heard anything about it. I didn't know anything about it. And they hadn't even run a show yet, but I saw a commercial for them. Like, you know, Nick had put together this commercial and like, there's like Johnny Crash, who I trained him as well. He's on this commercial and this Delta Junior's on there and Xander Creed's on there and they're like slapping around these guys that I've never seen before. And I'm like, well, all right, what's this? So I end up like I go to the very first show and like they had this like really tiny little ring and very much looked like, you know, some like very amateur, but like it kind of looked like it was supposed to be amateur, like, you know, kind of taking the piss, as the Brits would say. And I was like, all right, but it's kind of, you know, there was like 70 people there. It wasn't like a bunch of people. And I was like, all right, you know, it's kind of funny. So let me see, like, you know, if they're still around a year from now, I'm going to see about getting booked with them and see if I could get wrestling on the card. And so like a year later, you know, I went to a couple of the shows and Sam and Sam Talent and Nathan Lund, the commentary team, they were really kind of what drew me into LOL in a big way and made me want to work there, because they were calling, especially Nathan, likes calling the wrestling match, but he's using indie names for the wrestling moves. You know, it's not like the moves, you know, he just, you know, it was like, oh, you watch more than just WWE, don't you? And so I was really impressed by it. And the fact that they were so funny, and I kind of like, it was intriguing to me, because it was like, oh, this is a place where I could wrestle a little bit different. And so, you know, I reached out to Nick, and, you know, I was like, hey, I want to wrestle for you. And he was like, Nick already kind of knew who I was. So he was like, yeah, when do you want to start? And so I ended up starting. And early on those days, the cards, the wrestling talent on the cards wasn't quite as up to the level that it is now. So it was a lot of good talent, and then like a lot of not great talent. So, but that was kind of the point. It was like, when I first started wrestling there, I was like, all right, I need to wrestle in a style that will give Sam and Nate something to joke about. Like, that was kind of like, I saw my role as like giving them something that they could joke about.
Some material, yeah.
Material. So it was like, all right, how do I work my style of match and let them do that? Because I'm not a comedy wrestler. I'm not known for putting any comedic elements into my matches. I've always been kind of the straightforward, like kind of ass kicker kind of wrestler. But that, it was like a new opportunity for me to kind of do something a little bit different. And so it was just like, as soon as I wrestled that first match, and then after that it just became like next match and the next match, and then before I know it, like a lot more, you know, these new talents are showing up, and you know, Royce Isaacs was there, and like we ended up getting Cody Devine on, and then we end up getting like Caleb Crush, and then like Anaya shows up and Hoodlum shows up, and like all these like just much better wrestlers start like showing up, and just watching everybody just get better and better. And then all of a sudden, like, the shows are just phenomenal. And we got the funniest comedians, out there, and they're making the audience laugh. And the audience is extremely unique, because they started off like just comedy fans. Like, there wasn't any wrestling fans there. And so we would go out there and like, you know, a hip toss, and the whole audience would lose their mind, because it was like, oh my God. And then slowly but surely, and more wrestling fans start showing up, and the comedy fans start becoming wrestling fans.
Yeah.
So, you know, so like I've been seeing the same people come to these shows for like 5 years now, 6 years now, and just slowly watching them go from like, I didn't even know this. Wow, this is crazy. That's real wrestling. Wow. And now they're just like, you know, I set up for my finish, and they, you know, rail gun, you know, you could hear them actually calling the move. You know, they're moonsaults and like chanting my name, and you know, like, it's really cool. Like this last show, when I went out there after being off for 6 months, you know, I was excited to see them, and you know, I was just wanting to see that reaction, even if it was just from 50 people, and to go out there and like they're still chanting my name, and they're still like they're responding to all the moves, and they kind of know the beats of your match and everything like that, and it's like. I remember when you guys just, you know, didn't know what to do and didn't know, you know, now every single time, this match is scheduled for one fall, like, you know. So I slowly got to watch these comedy fans become also wrestling fans, which is pretty cool.
Well, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what Lucha Libre and Last has done is you know, it's brought in a new audience to the pro wrestling scene in Denver, and it's turned these comedy fans into pro wrestling fans, and it's brought a lot more casual comedy fans back to the Oriental Theatre. It's enabled the attendance to grow, and it's kind of it's never ending cycle of bringing in inexperienced wrestling fans and sending them away wanting more from Triple L. But I mean, let's talk a bit about your time as champion there, because between 2016 and 2017, for a full 12 months, you were the Triple L heavyweight champion. You defeated your trainee Royce Isaacs, who's the former champion, to become the champion, and you wrestled all comers during your 12-month reign. But that must have been a hell of a time for you during that period. I mean, you had a good storyline going into it. You chased the title for quite a while as well, didn't you, Lonnie? And then you finally captured the title and held it for 12 months. But that whole period around your championship reign is a fantastic story, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a really, really cool story. Just because I've been champion for other companies before, and worked that main event, you know, plenty of times. But knowing that LOL was going to put the belt on me was a really special thing, because I've always been like, I get the championship, it's just like I'm not a long run champion, you know, like I'll hold the belt for 3, 4, or 5 months. And then, you know, let's figure out how we could move things along, you know. But with LLL, it was made clear to me that I was going to have a very long run with the belt. And that's something I've never really gotten to do before. So it was like, okay, cool. And then building me up for it, like, was really cool too. So, like, I had a match with Royce Isaacs for the title at this event called Taco Fest out here in Denver. And there's like 2,000 people there, 3,000 people there, whatever. Wow. It was. And yeah, and me and Royce go out there and we just crushed it. We had such a great match, like such a great match. And Nathan Lund, he even said, like, I 100% thought you were going to win that match, because there was like the near falls were just like so there. And those people there, they're there for this Taco Fest thing. They weren't there for wrestling. And like, they're, you know, the reaction that they gave us was really, really cool. And just right there at the end, you know, right when you thought I was going to win it, like, Royce pulls out this move and he ends up winning. And it was just like, ah, Lonnie was so close. And then so, like, I go on this tear and I'm like beating this person up, and I beat this one and I beat that one. And Nick comes up to me and he's like, so after this next show, the show after that, you're going to wrestle Royce and for the belt. And I was like, all right, cool. He's like, to build you up for the title, I'm going to put you in a gauntlet match. So you're going to wrestle four people and like go through all four people. And I'm like, you know, I'm not a big wrestler, right? Like, I'm not Braun Strowman, man. Like, you want me to beat up four people in a row? And, I was like, I'll do it. I'm like, I'm not going to say no to that, of course. So we had to figure out a gauntlet match where it was, you know, I could go through four people on my road to the title. And I ended up, like, the first guy that got in the ring, I forgot his name, and he's still training out here, but I ended up just, like, grabbing him around the waist. I think it was his very first match ever. Rolling him back, kick him in the face, 1, 2, 3, match over. And then, McCormick Battle or Mac, he comes out and wrestle him back and forth, finally get him, beat him. And then Johnny Crash comes out, and he starts beating me up, and I'm tired by this point, and I end up just pulling it out, you know, right at the end with Johnny. And then, like, Mondo Romero, who's like this big, like, bruiser, comes out and just destroys me. And just like, he just wipes the floor with me, takes me out to the audience, throws me through the chairs, and just like makes a mess of me. And then finally, like, drags me back in the ring, and like, I end up like pulling something out of my ass and end up winning that. But I remember this lady in the audience was like I just wrestled these three guys, and Mondo comes out here and he throws me through all these chairs, and I got beer all over me, and I'm laying in the audience and just have the absolute hell kicked out of me. And I can hear this lady go, why do they hate him so much? I distinctly remember them, her saying that, which was just hilarious. And then the next month I'm ready to go for the belt and take on Royce and end up winning the belt. And it was really cool because you just kind of go on that 12-month tear, and like, we end up wrestling in like Nebraska and like a couple other places. And it was a really, really fun time, but very taxing. when it was time to not be the champion anymore, it was kind of like, all right, I did my job. You know, it was, I didn't feel like I told that story. I was a champion that long. Cool, I got to do that, and got to wrestle some just incredible matches. I think during that time, I got to, me and it was a three-way dance with me and Caleb Crush and DJ Z, Joken Wild in, yeah, NXT now, and we had just an insanely fun match. Like, we've had match like I think all of us after the match was over, like all three of us were just like floating on cloud nine just because of how much fun we had. Wrestled a three-way dance with Mike Seidel and Cody Devine. You know, the first we had two different ones, but the first one was just like stupid fun, where we just like, it was, you know, that kind of flow where everything's just going right and it's all clicking. So I have a lot of really good great memories from my time as champion in LOL, and just how much the, you know, fans responded. And, you know, they give you the, you know, to give you like, hey, we're selling this place out and fans are loving it and we get this reaction and we trust you to close the show. And it's a big deal because it's like, you know, it's your job to make them want, your job is to close the show. Your job is to follow 2 hours of wrestling with more wrestling and use that time to get the fans to want to buy a ticket to the next show. You know, it's a big responsibility and a big honor for somebody to ask you to do that, and to ask you to do it for a year, you know, it meant a lot for sure.
Indeed. And it was a hell of a title reign and a fantastic story, a great build to actually winning the championship. But in your 21 years as a pro wrestler on each, do you have any favorite matches, any matches that really stand out in your memory as being matches you're particularly proud of or enjoy watching back? But any favorite matches from your 21 years that you've been a part of?
Quite a few. I have lots, like so many good memories of like so many matches, and I tend to remember the audience's reaction to the matches more than I remember the matches. Like, you know, like I can remember me and Trajan Ender had his retirement match in Primos, and what a big deal that was, you know, and like how the audience responded and how the commentary team was responding. That was great. You know, I had a match in Saga with Epic, you know, we went like almost an hour. You know, that was very fun. You know, so many matches in Lucha Libre and Laos. Those two matches that I just mentioned, you know, Wrestling Voice or like Len Parker, or, you know, me and Anaya and Curtis Cole, you know, just, you know, last year we had a really fun, like, great match. You know, like I said, there's this, I'm very fortunate that I've gotten to have so many matches that I was very proud to be a part of, you know, so couldn't pick out one or two or three or four or anything like that. It's nice to look back and go, man, that was an insanely fun match. And, you know, against all different kinds of wrestlers, and, you know, to go in there and be able to have a really good match with Filter, and then you go and have a great match with Johnny Crash, you know, who I've always had really fun matches with that dude. And, you know, to go and wrestle guys my size, smaller than me, bigger than me, have go in there and wrestle, you know, wrestle the girls, and, you know, lots of these multiple man matches and stuff like that. I've got quite a few under my belt that I'm very proud of, and very happy that I've gotten to experience so many like fun matches and so fun audiences that given me some great reactions that, you know, kind of make me proud. So yeah.
Yeah, indeed. And I think we alluded to this earlier on, but the wrestling scene in Denver, I mean, you go back maybe 10 or 15 years, there wasn't a huge scene in Denver, but now it's kind of a really kind of buzzing wrestling landscape, really, with Lucha Libre and Laughs. You got Respect Women's Pro Wrestling, Rocky Mountain Pro, and other groups. But from when you first started, the wrestling landscape around Denver must seem completely different to what it's become now.
Completely different. When I first started out here wrestling, nobody on the entire card had any kind of professional wrestling gear that was actually made for wrestling. not a lot of gym rats, a lot of bigger heavyweight kind of guys. And nobody really kind of knew what they were doing. Like, there wasn't a lot of guys that were honest, like, really kind of knew. We were all just kind of fumbling along trying to figure it out. And now, you go from that to like, you have matches like with Lucha Libre and Laughs and Rocky Mountain Pro and Primos and all these other companies, and you see these guys having just these really fun, like, incredible shows and incredible cards. And I've been part of some like really, really, really great wrestling cards where, you know, afterwards you just, ever the whole locker room is buzzing because we all just know how good we did, you know. Like, just so many, like, there's so many instances of that these days, and it's fun that I'm on more cards like that that I'm not, you know, and I can't tell you the last time I was on a card that I wasn't proud to be on, you know. The Lucha Libre and Laughs, like, it's just like, it's like, you know, banger after banger after banger, like every, you know, and it's so much fun. It's a show you really look forward to going and doing and being a part of, and, you know, having that option to, you know, to go to other companies and to do the same thing there and to wrestle there and, you know, show up and wrestle at Primo's every now and then and have that audience, you know, respond and be, you know, be happy to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's the landscape has just changed dramatically. It couldn't change more, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and Lucha Libre and Laughs, they've got another show booked or another show planned for the 16th of October, if I'm not mistaken, is there the next time they're planning to open the doors at the Oriental Theatre, which is really great news, and no doubt another fantastic show. Hopefully you'll be booked on it, but the 16th of October is the next Lucha Libre and Laughs show, Lonnie. Lots to look forward to there, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, no, I'll be there. Nick asked me a couple weeks ago, so yeah, I'll definitely be there. Definitely look forward to it. I, you know, it's nice to be back in the ring, and it's nice to be able to do the thing that we all love to do. So, and just looking forward to seeing the audience, and I hope they're looking forward to seeing us. And yeah, man, we're chomping at the bit. We can't wait. So for sure, bro. Thank you for being a supporter of it, man. We it's pretty cool that our little comedy wrestling show has reached all the way over to you and made you a fan, man. So thank you.
No, absolutely. It was going to reach me sooner or later. It's such a fantastic product. But before we let you go, Lonnie, it's an opportunity for you to throw out to my listeners and viewers any Twitter handles, Instagram, Facebook. Where can we find you on social media? Or maybe if you've got any merch to sell. But the floor is yours to throw out any plugs, my friend.
Well, I've never really been a merch guy, so I don't really have all that. My handle on Instagram is Valdez Addiction. You can find me there. I'm on Facebook as well. I have my fan page there. You can reach out to there. Happy to talk to anybody. I don't know. I support Lucha Libre, support your local wrestlers, support each other. You know what I mean? Like, the world's going through a lot of crazy times right now. So
yeah.
Find a smile, find a laugh, and find good times wherever you can. That's what I'm hoping for everybody. Come enjoy the shows and laugh and watch me almost die.
There we go. Well, Lonnie Valdez, we can't wait to see you back in the Oriental Theatre on the 16th of October. And thank you very much for your time on the Wrestling with Jonas podcast, my friend.